Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. If you are listening for the very first time, I want to welcome you to the show. I also invite you to go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, or my Facebook page, What Women Must Know, because all of my shows are sent to you. So if you opt in to the website, you'll get not only What Women Must Know sent to you every week, but you'll also get the second show I do on Progressive Radio Network, which is called The Love Code. And The Love Code is about sharing inspirational guests to uplift, to transform, to support your healing. It's more of a spiritual focus and has a lot of practical suggestions and strategies to help you on your journey. So, Dr. Cheryl Selman, or What Women Must Know, things are posted there, shows are posted there, a lot of articles. Please join me on either one or both of those platforms. It'd be great to have you part of the community. We're going to talk about a topic today that is of great interest, great concern. It's a topic that I really want to shout on the rooftops for everyone to listen to, because it is a topic that has profound ramifications for everyone listening. We're going to be talking with my guest today, Dr. Jolene Brighton, who was on the show several months ago. She is brilliant at what she is doing, and I totally support her passion and mission. And she has a new book. The book is all about, well, it's called Beyond the Pill, Reversing the Dangerous Side Effects of the Birth Control Pill is our topic today. Her new book is called Beyond the Pill. The full title is A 30-Day Program to Balance Your Hormones, Reclaim Your Body, and Reverse the Dangerous Side Effects of the Birth Control Pill. Quite a lot to go over today. Before I have Jolene come on the show, I just want to share a bit about who she is and her background. Dr. Jolene Brighton is a functional medicine naturopathic medical doctor and the founder of Rubus Health, women's medicine clinic that specializes in women's hormones. She is recognized as a leading expert in post-birth control syndrome and the long-term side effects associated with hormonal contraceptives. Dr. Brighton is the author of Beyond the Pill, a 30-day plan to support women on birth control, help them transition off, and eliminate the symptoms of post-birth control syndrome. She is a speaker, a women's health advocate, and a medical advisor for one of the first data-driven apps to offer women personalized birth control recommendations. And as always, it's such a pleasure to have Dr. Jolene Brighton on the show today. So hello and welcome, Jolene.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to chat again.
Well, I'm excited to have you on because we covered a lot of information the last time I had you on, but it's just a smidgen of the big story that we really need to tell everyone, because I think the issue of and the consequences from taking the birth control pill and the many variations on a theme of contraception techniques, strategies, you know, devices is an untold story, and we must know what's going on because there are many, many serious side effects and ramifications from taking these, you know, hormone-driven therapies, drugs. Whatever you, I mean, they are drugs. We need to understand that. Mm-hmm. So I want to start, Jolene, in the very beginning, with the introduction of the birth control pill into our society. That is a part of history that most women don't know about anymore. When I was researching my book, Hormone Heresy, I looked at that history, and there's a saying that goes, history is written by the winners. And in this case, the winners were the drug companies and pharmaceutical companies, but we really need to know about that early history. Can you just kind of quickly explain what happened in the early days when the pill was introduced in the 1960s?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is something I think is a really important thing for all of us to understand is, one, contraceptives have been around since forever. When you go back into ancient societies, like, they were making condoms, they were doing all kinds of stuff to prevent pregnancy. And it really wasn't until the 1950s that we saw the studies start with hormonal birth control. And with those studies, what's really important is part of why I dedicated my book to the women who went before us to show us that there's a better way, is that women died in these trials for us to be able to have the pill as we know it today. And, you know, it is 100% instrumental in the women's movement. But I, you know, when I started taking the pill, which was more than 20 years ago, I didn't realize that, you know, the pill had stepped onto the scene in the 1960s, but there were government mandates that, like, you couldn't actually get access to birth control unless you were in, you were married. You were a married woman. So the Supreme Court actually was ruling on this, and it was the, you know, it was not until 1965-ish that they ruled, and I'm not a historian, so you guys, you might have to Google the dates to get them exactly, right? But with that, that they actually ruled that, okay, we will give women who are married access to hormonal birth control, yet unmarried women were still being denied this. And it really, so in the 60s, women started hormonal birth control, but it was only a small subset. As the trials were going on, something else that happened in all of this is that female medical students, if you were a woman going to medical school, you were actually forced to be a part of these trials, these birth control trials. And the early pill was horrific. So women died, and it wasn't completely disclosed. It was a much higher dose of hormones. So women would complain, like a lot of women stopped because of nausea and because of mood symptoms. And then, you know, they brought the pill out. It was then entered into the market in the 1960s. And it was then a decade later that women started to challenge the safety of the pill. So, you know, I have a lot of people who are like, wow, this is like, this is such a time to be alive. It's the first time women are challenging the pill. And I'm like, no, man, we did this in the 70s. And because of that, because of women feeling so awful with it and advocating for themselves and the potential risk of death, the formulation of the pill then changed. And the package inserts in these drugs became a thing of, like, letting women know what to look out for. So, you know, in all of that, we've seen iterations with hormonal birth control over the decades. But when I really want women to understand, when a doctor says hormonal birth control is a low dose, the pill is a low dose, that's because comparatively speaking, it is a low dose compared to the very first iterations. However, it's still a high enough dose that you take it. Your liver gets a shot at detoxing and breaking it down, but still enough gets through that it shuts down brain ovarian communication. So while it is a low dose compared to the initial pill that came out, it's still a significant amount of synthetic hormones to take in and to have in order for it to work and for it to suppress brain ovarian communication. And what's really concerning is that, you know, in the 1970s, women raised issues with that, but here we are now. This is now, as we talk, this is 2019, and we are now just seeing studies coming out about how hormonal birth control actually alters the female brain and how it may be really interfering with our relationships, not just romantic, but also perhaps the way that we form bonds in society, like with our children or our friends. And that's concerning to me, that we've had this medication out being distributed to the public since the 1960s, and we are only now starting to ask some of these questions. And it's because, you know, we've had to fight so hard to be able to have access to birth control and in a lot of ways not have the government dictate to us that, like, we must be married and, you know, belong to a man before we can have hormonal birth control. And in fact, I'm not sure if most people realize that, you know, there once upon a time in the United States, the government actually ruled that the distribution or education of birth control of any kind was illegal. And in fact, your mailman could confiscate anything you were getting in the mail that would help you understand your body further or help you understand how to prevent pregnancy. And it wasn't until 1900s that we finally saw, and people might be like, wait, what? Like, yeah, this is back in like the 1800s that this got passed. And then it wasn't until, you know, in the late 1930s, early 1940s with Margaret Sanger, who really led the charge on this, that the ban ending this birth control and allowing women to start to get educated about their bodies was lifted. So there has been a lot of control of not only birth control, but also the information we receive and actually understanding our bodies for a long time, which is why when you start talking about the problems with birth control, some women can feel really triggered by that, because we've had to fight so hard to be able to have access to this and access to the information about our bodies, which, you know, this is something that in this day and age, like, it's ridiculous to me that we still have states that don't have medically accurate sex education classes and don't actually teach women or men about their bodies, as if it's going to some way prevent pregnancy to lie to somebody that you can get pregnant any day out of the month. It's actually a great disservice. So I'm not anti-birth control for anybody listening, and we do deserve to have the right to this, but we also deserve to have all the information about our bodies and about what this drug can do to our bodies.
And to me, a big point of this conversation is not being anti the pill. It's being fully informed of what the pill is, made up of estrogens and progestins, the consequences, the side effects of the pill. So anyone taking the pill can mitigate those side effects or the consequences to overall health, and can take the right supplements or the right dietary choices to support the body from the side effects of the pill, or, as we're going to discuss, looking at the other options for the conditions that the pill is commonly prescribed for, so women can get healthy rather than just take a pill or any pharmaceutical drug that basically is suppressing symptoms rather than really supporting the body and getting healthy. So those are so many issues that we want to cover today. Just so people really understand, when we talk about the pill, and by the way, back in the 60s when it was that really, really, you know, the first generation of the pill, those women were the guinea pigs. They really were the guinea pigs, because no one really knew what was going to happen. And those women were dying of blood clots and strokes from the high dose of those of the estrogens and progestins in that pill, especially estrogens.
And people weren't talking about it.
Exactly. And then we have this terminology, it's a low-dose pill. But what people don't understand, that was a relative term. It was a low dose in relationship to the excessive high dose that was initially prescribed. But a low dose is not like low, you know, safe, insignificant, because you have to have a pretty high dose of hormones to shut off your ovaries.
Totally.
Right.
And,
so,
you know, that's the other issue that we still face, that, you know, a lot of women feel like, oh, well, we've got birth control now. Now I can fix my symptoms and fix my body, and this is something that I should have. But we still have issues with education about women's bodies, and that these symptoms are actually signs of something else going on in your body, and you deserve to be educated in that rather than just have your symptoms suppressed. You can suppress your symptoms. That's 100% you're right. But if you have these symptoms, you shouldn't just be passed a medication that shuts down an entire system in your body. We wouldn't do this with our gut. We wouldn't do this with other systems without discussing it with the person first. And so this is really, I mean, our issues that we had in, you know, the 1800s, they still are carrying through today, where we are not getting the full story. And that's what I set out to do in my book, is give women the full story about their body, about their symptoms, about birth control, so that they can make the best decision for themselves. Like, we very much still live in an era that regulates the information that women get about their bodies, whether it be in sex ed, whether it be Facebook controlling what is allowed to be posted online. Like, the, you know, there's so many different ways that we are still being throttled in having an open and honest dialogue about women's bodies.
And I think one of the areas where women are really being denied access is when they go to their doctor's visit and are being prescribed some form of contraceptive, well, you know, of the birth control pill. But we have to also explain to people listening that it's not, we're not just talking about the pill being used as a contraceptive option. It's as a therapeutic option for a lot of other conditions that have nothing to do with regulating your menstrual cycle or eliminating your risk of conceiving. It's just it's a therapeutic prescription. So few doctors actually are warning women, giving women a full disclosure of what are the risks and side effects, and that to me is causes a lot of medical harm as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's, you know, even understanding the history of the family, is there a risk of strokes or blood clots and what other conditions may be going on? They're just like handed out like candy.
And the funny thing is that, like, that's a very common phrase for people to use, is that, oh, they just hand out birth control like candy. And I say, actually, they're more likely to hand you birth control than they are candy, because they know what sugar can do, and they know about insulin resistance, and they know about diabetes, and they understand this. But, you know, it's a really an upstream issue, is that your doctor isn't seeking to do harm. Instead, the education they get is that this pill can fix pretty much any female ill. Therefore, if you give it to a woman, then you're going to help her. Now, why would, if you're a doctor, why wouldn't you want to write that prescription if you believe this is the best thing that can help her? But the problem is that most doctors are not educated to the full extent, as I've done in Beyond the Pill, about what happens when women are on hormonal birth control. Most doctors aren't aware of the nutrient depletions that take place. And when I talk with physicians about this and saying, well, what if that acne is actually due to PCOS? Or what if, like, those irregular periods are actually due to hypothyroidism? It's something where they're like, oh, but I gave her the pill and it gave her a period again. No, it gave her a medication withdrawal bleed. There was no ovulation, so it's not a true menstrual cycle. And if you start to get into those conversations, we see the light bulbs go off where doctors are like, wow, I really wasn't taught about this. I really didn't understand it, like, through that lens and in that way. And, I feel bad for doctors, because they set out to be able to help people. Then they got pushed into this insurance paradigm where they've got 7 minutes to hear somebody and give them a solution and get them out of pain and out of grief as soon as possible. And so in a lot of ways, the pill and hormonal birth control for symptom management, which is, you know, approximately almost 60% of women, that's their primary reason for taking it, it's also a solution to the broken medical system that we have that gives doctors so few minutes in a room with a patient and don't allow them to actually, you know, hear them and work with them. And a lot of it is because, you know, the conventional training of an allopathic physician is more of acute management. It's not really about chronic care or even working with natural physiology in some ways. And while they serve, I mean, acute medicine is great to have when you need it, but when it comes to women's hormones, it takes a longer conversation one-on-one with the doctor. It takes a doctor who's really dialed into that and someone that can help educate you around your body and spend time doing that. Hormonal imbalances, they don't happen overnight. It's not an acute condition. It's a chronic condition that's had years of development before you ever had symptoms. So it takes a different kind of doctor.
So what are the various conditions that women present with that are recommended to take the pill for?
So any period problem. So if you have menstrual cramps or menstrual pain, so this is, some estimates here of women who take the pill primarily for symptom management, 31% are prescribed it for period cramps and pain. And we can talk about why you could be having these things and really simple natural remedies to fix that, aside from shutting down your entire reproductive system. The irregular periods or unpredictable periods, that's about 28% of women. Acne and skin conditions, that estimated to be 14%. Endometriosis, what's interesting is it's estimated to be 4% of birth control prescriptions. I believe that number is much higher because many, many women with endometriosis go overlooked and undiagnosed, and that may really fall into the camp of the menstrual cramps or period pain. We've come to understand through the research that the younger you were put on hormonal birth control for cramps, and if those cramps persist, the higher the probability you will be diagnosed with endometriosis. And then we have about 11% of women who have unspecified hormonal symptoms. They just throw them in this bucket of like, I don't know, something's off with your hormones. So here, we give you the pill. And that might look like migraines. It might look like feeling a little more weepy before your period, having insomnia, hot flashes, night sweats, symptoms that can show up anytime in our lives, and also symptoms that can be really specific to perimenopause. So those are some of the top reasons why women are prescribed hormonal birth control. And it was very shocking to me when I got into these surveys of women and women who are on hormonal birth control stating, why do you actually take it? I thought for sure, like, oh yeah, the majority are taking it to prevent pregnancy, but it's not. Like, that used to be why women took it. And then we saw things start to really change in the 1990s, where birth control became like the solution to any women's health issue. And we got marketed to that our bodies are betraying us, that our hormones are meant to sabotage us and make our life hell, and that we're just crazy because we have hormones. And in reality, if you spend time in PubMed and reading the research, female hormones actually give us superpowers. Our brains work in a very different way. We're not better than men, except for the, like, we do gestate babies. We grow humans in our body. That's kind of cool. But we're not better. We're different. And these differences actually are strengths that can be leveraged.
So we have to throw in acne. I just came across a young girl who was put on acne when she was put on birth control pill when she was like 12. You know, she's been on it for like 10, 15 years. And we also have to throw in women are put on the pills for no reason other than they find menstrual cycles inconvenient, messy, whatever. So they just have them eliminated. You know, why not? You know, take care of that problem. So there's so many reasons that the pill is used far beyond as a contraceptive option. And I want you to just briefly mention, because I want to go into the solutions for those conditions for which women are prescribed the birth control pill. I think that's really valuable information so women have options. But before we do that, can you just list the top risks and side effects from taking any form of estrogen or progestin products?
Well, these synthetic hormones affect every single system in your body. So while they were initially, by design, they're only supposed to affect the reproductive tract. But like majority of medications, they affect other systems. And so with this, hormonal birth control depletes nutrients, magnesium, zinc, selenium, antioxidants. I mean, that pretty much, that right there is a huge side effect in terms of developing fatigue and brain fog and anxiety and, having impaired detox capacity. So there's the nutrient depletion. There's also the issue that it's inflammatory. We know inflammation leads to chronic disease and chronic conditions. So this inflammatory state can be problematic. In all women, there is some level of stroke, heart attack, and cancer risk. And depending on your individual lifestyle factors, your genetics, that risk may be higher for you. And so while very often the stroke and heart attack risk is really dismissed by doctors, it depends. And as I talk about Beyond the Pill, there's certain genetic mutations that if you have those, don't take the pill. We can screen for that and like save your life. And so these should be screened for before you start hormonal birth control. In addition, it really is hard on your gut. So it decreases microbial diversity, also something we know that lends to chronic disease. It causes intestinal hyperpermeability or leaky gut, which is something that contributes to autoimmune development, food sensitivities. We know that being on the pill is correlated with a higher risk of developing Crohn's disease. The progestins, we used to think, like, we vilified the synthetic estrogen for a very long time. So for people listening, this is a very common question I get, is women will say, well, I'm not taking the pill. I'm using a Mirena IUD, or I'm taking the mini pill, or I do the depot shot. Well, if you are using a progestin-only contraceptive, you have to understand that the correlation between developing depression is higher with progestin-only, and that the progestin actually seems to be altering the female brain. Like, yes, estrogen is involved in this, but the progestin as well, and there can be immune system activation, and that can lead to, issues in the brain altogether, But on top of that, because of nutrient depletions and the inflammation, we can see, yes, there's the mood symptoms correlated, but also that you're making neurotoxins to your brain while you're on it. And that's very problematic. Like toxic chemicals that you made in your own brain, not a good scenario. Hormonal birth control is also very hard on the liver. That's going to be the first place that things pass through. And so we had seen that women who take the pill, they have higher incidences of liver tumors, and there's also genetic alterations that happen. And then there's the impact on your reproductive system itself. Like you may not actually reestablish your communication between brain and ovaries when you come off of it. It seems to be the younger you were put on it, your brain and ovarian communication didn't have that maturation cycle, and so that can be harder to reestablish. We also see vaginal atrophy, pain with intercourse, pain with orgasm, increase in yeast infections while women are on hormonal birth control. And so there's truly, I could keep going, there's an entire book that I wrote on this, of all of the ways that hormonal birth control really impacts us and things just so much of what we were never taught as women and also doctors are not being taught.
I know. It's so shocking when you go through that list. It's like, oh, my God, you know, women had no idea that that was going on. And, you know,
I took it for 10 years. I had no idea.
You know, I was one of those women that when I didn't get a menstrual cycle until I was, they thought it was late. I was 16. Actually, that should be the normal age when women should be menstruating. Now it's down to 10, 11, whatever is considered normal,
eight.
Which is an aberration.
We're starting
from nature.
To see 8-year-olds.
Oh my God. You know, that just pains me to hear that. So they put me on the pill to kind of initiate it and then to keep me regular. You know, now with the knowledge I have, that's so insane. You know, how do you get a woman or a young woman to have, you know, natural regular menstrual cycles when you're on two drugs that have this list of side effects that will alter the body's ability to function? How can you ever have a healthy menstrual cycle? And women so often are put on the pill to regulate menstrual cycles. How do you do that with these toxic drugs that disrupt everything? You'll never get a healthy cycle.
Yeah, it's a super bizarre concept to think that to regulate, and this is why, you know, I will say that hormonal birth control cannot fix your periods, cannot fix your skin, cannot fix your hormones. It cannot fix any of that. And I'll have women who say, no, but the doctor gave me the pill and it fixed my acne. What happens when you stop it? Oh, it comes back. Then you really haven't fixed it. Like instead, like you're suppressing it. And just like a Band-Aid can't help you heal a wound, it just covers it up so that you don't see it. The pill is doing a very similar thing in your body. And you cannot, I will say to doctors, like, that will challenge me on this and say, no, it absolutely does fix their cycle. I'm like, okay, so you're stopping them from ovulating, which is the most important part of the menstrual cycle and really, like, the entire aim of the menstrual cycle. But the other thing is that if somebody had gas and bloating, if they had, you know, they were having digestive issues, you wouldn't give a drug, shut down the entire digestive tract, make it so that person never eats again, you know, just feed them through a line into their vein and say, yep, we fixed your gut. Like, you wouldn't do that. So this, to me, it's a disrespect of how important our reproductive system is.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the options as we educate women to, first of all, understand that whatever their issue or symptom or condition may be, it's a message that needs attention. Mm-hmm. You just can't go in, take the pill and suppress it and think it will go away. As you said, like with all those women put on the pill for acne, if they stop it, that's that catch-22, right? They stop it and the issue comes back, and so they're caught in this trap. So we need to help women understand what their real needs of their bodies, the real need is of their bodies, and get them healthy again. So let's start with acne, because that is a really big problem for women, and especially women who've been put on the pill to deal with their acne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, the number one reason that I see women with post-birth control syndrome jump right back on birth control is acne, because nobody wants to have their face breaking out like a teenager when they're in their 30s or their 40s. And so I totally feel that for everybody listening. When I came off the pill, I actually developed cystic acne for the first time in my life. And it's horrific for your mental health but and your emotional health. But in terms of your overall health, acne is one of the most benign symptoms that your body can express. So when we see acne, there's something deeper going on. And when it comes to acne, it's never just one thing, and it's going to take more than a month or two to be able to heal that. And so we get conditioned in this current medical paradigm to think that I have a symptom, then I just get a solution in the form of a medication or a pill of any kind, and that just goes away. But when we work with our body naturally to heal, there is this healing therapeutic order, so to speak, and skin tends to be one of the last organs to heal because to your body, it's a lot more important than your, than, you know, compromising your heart or, you know, compromising your liver to put, you want to heal all of that, and we want to put whatever we can out on the skin to be expressed. So some root cause reasons of why we have acne, it can be gut dysbiosis, you know, food sensitivities and inflammation. You could be eating the wrong fats. So you're eating more omega-6 fatty acids, more processed foods, not getting enough of those healthy fats to really feed the oil production in your skin. You could have dysbiosis, so the wrong kind of stuff growing in your gut. We have yet to really embark on the skin microbiome, but there seems to be evidence that if your gut's in balance, then your skin flora will be imbalanced as well. For some women, one of the foods that we see that can be a huge trigger is dairy. And with dairy, you know, we've got to cut that off for a good 6 weeks to understand if there is any improvement with that. So we want to keep that in mind. You may have excess testosterone, or you're making the wrong kind of testosterone, or you've got an inflammatory condition underlying this that's causing your adrenal glands to push out more DHEA, which gets converted to testosterone. This testosterone excess production can be very common in PCOS, but it can happen in other women as well. It can happen just from poor dietary practices. And interestingly, we also see that having a deficiency in zinc or vitamin A, some of these really important skin nutrients, can also be correlated with increased incidence of acne. And why this is something that we should all pause on is that hormonal birth control depletes zinc and vitamin A, two things that you absolutely need to have a healthy gut and also to have healthy skin. So while you're on it, it could be depleting nutrients, wreaking havoc on your gut, actually making the root cause of your acne worse. And when you come off, you may have what I term in the book an androgen rebound, which is now your ovaries are like, we can make testosterone again. And they fire off testosterone. Your enzyme 5-alpha reductase converts that into the wrong kind. You have oily skin, acne, and you're losing hair on your head. So in some conditions, so some women, birth control can actually make their acne worse. And I've met with women who are like, birth control made my acne worse when I got on it and I've come off and I can't get ahead of it. And then for other women, they can sometimes never have had acne, but when they come off, now they have new onset of acne.
And then, so that requires taking some good support for their microbiome, making sure they get their zinc, vitamin A, getting, you know, high quality nutrition, getting off the junk food, having, you know, nourishing food. You know, it's that whole process of replenishing, restoring the key nutrients and getting their body balanced again, which, you know, seems to be the,
and it's something,
you know, the most fundamental thing.
Totally. And it takes time to heal your skin, but you will see improvements and you will feel better. And the side effect of women who start working on their skin health is that their entire body gets healthy and they feel a lot better. They have more energy. They have less brain fog. Their periods get easier.
Okay. So good. So, okay. Well, let's move on to one of the next conditions that all women are being prescribed the pill for. What would you like to choose of the many?
Yeah, well, let's talk about cramps, because menstrual cramps are something where, you know, we may find ourselves popping Midol every year or every month, excuse me, as part of our period coming. And, you know, these cramps can be really painful. So we need to investigate the root cause. But for a lot of women, It can be as simple as increasing omega-3 fatty acids and bringing on magnesium, because both of those influence prostaglandin production. Now, prostaglandins are hormone-like substances that cause contractions of the uterus, which is fantastic if you want to shed your uterine lining, or you want to, which is having your period, or you want to have a baby when it's time. But if you are fueling these with mostly omega-6 fatty acids, then that can lend itself to pretty significant cramps. And the solution here isn't just to go on hormonal birth control. The solution is actually to look at what are your dietary practices and are you exercising? So aerobic exercise, so that means that you're not panting but your heart rate is up, that is associated with lower incidence of dysmenorrhea, so painful periods. So there's these simple diet and lifestyle fixes that you can come in with that can make your period a lot easier. And we have to understand that the period is the fifth vital sign. So if your period is painful, then that could be a sign that there's a magnesium deficiency. And then you might start seeing other issues, because we use magnesium for everything in our body, not literally everything, but it's involved in a lot of biochemical pathways. And so it may show up as cramps first, and then it may show up as other things in the future. Like you might have other muscle cramps, or you start having mood changes. So this is a really important thing that's worth investigating and making those little shifts and changes. Now, you might be a woman with endometriosis. It's important to understand if you have that condition. This is incredibly debilitating menstrual cramps and sometimes just pain throughout the entire month. And so this is something that should be investigated by your doctor. And you really should understand, like, is that your condition? Because that's different than just having period cramps. It's a chronic inflammatory condition. And that is something that's going to take a lot more interventions to really correct than, you know, the run-of-the-mill period cramps that most women experience.
So is endometriosis now considered an autoimmune condition?
This is very interesting. I mean, this is an area where we need a lot more research in. It's looking more and more like an autoimmune condition. In terms of, we see that there's this inflammatory component. So that means, you know, it's going to be linked and going back to the gut. There have been studies that have, there was a study that showed that you could find endometrial implants in fetuses. And so, you know, that's something that's really eye-opening, I think, for a lot of us to start to understand, like, what is actually going on here? Is it autoimmune? Is it linked to environmental toxins? Is it genetic? And likely there's a genetic predisposition here. You know, what's the role of estrogen? We used to think it was like, you know, estrogen-charged condition. Now we understand more that, like, with autoimmunity, immune system altogether, estrogen plays a really big role in that, and with inflammation as well. So right now it looks a lot like an autoimmune disease. However, we are lacking in significant research around endometriosis to really know what is the cause and why some women are more, more inclined to develop this condition and others are not.
And one last question before we move on from endometriosis. What is the way that it is diagnosed in women?
Yeah, so the gold standard is actually a surgical procedure. It's minimally invasive compared to, like, having back surgery or open heart surgery, but it's still a surgery. A laparoscopy is what is performed, and they make small incisions. They actually look around, and if they see adhesions, they usually remove those while they're there. That way you don't have to have repeat surgeries, and it can give some women relief. However, I've seen time and again, and many experts will agree, if you're not working on the root cause, those adhesions just come back, and these are women that have to have surgery after surgery after surgery. And so in endometriosis, that's definitely a condition where having a healthcare team serves you best. Having an excellent surgeon, but also having somebody who works on the root cause, perhaps working with a dietitian or a nutritional therapy practitioner, having a massage therapist that can help with adhesions and supporting you in that way. And I think having a mental health practitioner, whether it be a psychiatrist, psychologist, counselor, anybody with chronic pain is at higher risk for mood-related disorders. Chronic pain really weighs on us heavily, so having that mental and emotional support is really, really important.
You know, I just like to caution, when you're dealing with these severe imbalances manifesting, such as endometriosis, if you go to your, you know, endocrinologist or OBGYN, whoever you go to, there was only prescription drugs or surgery offered, and it's never about healing. So I agree with what you were saying. Find a team of people who are qualified to get to the root cause naturally. And, you know, it's very effective, whether it's working with a naturopath or it's working with an acupuncturist, working with someone who with meditation. It's so easy if you're dealing with pain to be put on pain meds, to, you know, be put on the pill, to be put on a variety of medications, and then they send you off to a psychiatrist, will get you on antidepressants. You know, that's terrifying to me. That's that you're caught in that vicious cycle of symptom relief with medications, which cause more symptoms, which, you know, that whole process goes on and on. So you got to get healthy. I mean, that's our message here with women. You know, your body's giving you a message. You've got to get healthy. You have to make changes, and you have to work with people who specialize in supporting you in getting your body healthy naturally. So what's another condition that women are prescribed the pill for?
Yeah, so in terms of other conditions, irregular periods, so unpredictable periods or long, heavy periods, just these period problems, can be another reason women are prescribed hormonal birth control. And if you have irregular periods or they're feeling unpredictable, you need to have investigations first. So you need to know, is this polycystic ovarian syndrome? One of the hallmark symptoms of that is anovulatory cycles. Is it hypothyroidism? That can also show up. If your period is missing altogether, the solution is not to give you hormonal birth control. It's to figure out why. It could be, you know, the conditions I previously mentioned. It could be a prolactinoma, a benign brain tumor that secretes a hormone called prolactin, which really should only be elevated when we're lactating. So in Beyond the Pill, I give a list of tests for all of these conditions that we've been talking about. Well, what your doctor should be investigating and what you can do right now. It is not a normal thing, although it can be common for periods to be irregular or go missing. The solution is not just to medicate you first. It is to figure out what is actually going on with that. And so as you understand your root cause, you can understand interventions as I outlined them in Beyond the Pill. So like if you're hypothyroid because you have an autoimmune condition that destroyed your thyroid gland, hormonal birth control will only make your thyroid worse. It won't actually help the situation. And while you may have a regular pill bleed, you may not be feeling yourself. You might be depressed, crying all the time, gaining weight, dry skin, your hair's falling out. And those are all signs of hypothyroidism. Hormonal birth control, you were never born needing these synthetic hormones. You were absolutely brought onto this planet needing thyroid hormones. So that is something that's a non-negotiable hormone. You must have that in your body. And so we have to be looking at these things and making sure we're treating the right thing. Women are complex, and that doesn't mean we get to be lazy and just pass them hormonal birth control with that. And if you are having something like long, heavy periods, like we need to investigate, like, do you have fibroids? Do you have, you know, potentially iron deficiency anemia? Again, if you start the pill, that's not going to correct iron deficiency anemia. And if what is going on for you is that your liver makes the wrong metabolites of estrogen, then putting you on a medication that depletes the nutrients you need to correct that biochemical pathway is also not going to be the solution. And so we have to have this conversation with women so that they can know what's happening in their body and know what their options are. And that's really, that's the Part Q. That's a legal requirement for every physician before they write a medication or give a medical intervention, is that they have to explain the alternatives and make sure they answer the patient's questions. And this is very, very concerning to me, because how often I hear from women who say, my doctor, so I just had a woman who wrote me today and said that her doctor dismissed her from care because she refused to take birth control and she asked for lab testing instead. And he said, no, you will take the birth control pill. And when she said, I'm not going to do that, he's like, well, then I'm not going to be your doctor anymore because you're not being compliant here. Which, if that's all he has in his toolkit, then he, you know, sending her to someone else, I can understand that. However, she questioned it and yet didn't have her questions answered. And that's the role of a doctor. So, Terry, where does the word doctor come from? Teacher. That's your primary role as a doctor. But again, we've been thrown into this broken medical system that, you know, really serves the insurance model more than it serves the patient-physician relationship, that has made it difficult for our doctors to be able to actually fill that role of teaching people about their body.
And then it makes a woman feel guilty that she is actually being criticized or being reprimanded, so it ties into other mm-hmm. issues as well. Can we talk about the connection between taking the birth control pill and risk of breast cancer?
Yeah. So what's really interesting about the risk of breast cancer is that as the new pill came out, so the new generation, and it was lower dose, comparatively speaking, as we already talked about, the assumption was that, okay, therefore it's lower dose, therefore the risk of breast cancer is much lower. And this was perpetuated by doctors, by scientists, we saw it in the news, and none of it was true. Because they never had a study to make that claim. And when the research actually came out, it showed that they were wrong, that it wasn't a lower risk. The risk was still, now, understand this for everybody listening. Statistically speaking, from a research perspective, it is a mild increased risk. It is not a, you know, really high increased risk. However, from a human perspective, we are talking about cancer. We are talking about a condition that impacts your life and everybody who surrounds you and is life-threatening. And so we have to understand that when researchers are presenting information and they're talking about its mild increase, that is statistically speaking based on looking at their analytics. So that's great. We can look at it that way. But we have to, as clinicians, then bring that to, but what are we actually talking about? Because we're not talking about acne, we're talking about cancer. It's the same with stroke and heart attack. Like, we're not talking about maybe your hair falls out, and that is a really, that sucks, okay? Nobody wants their hair to fall out, but you're not going to die. Like, what are we actually talking about here, and how is it clinically applicable? So we can't just parrot what the researchers say. We have to use our clinical wisdom and bring that to the patient. So breast, cervical, liver, and brain cancers all increase while you're on the pill. And the other cancers are decreased, so like endometrial cancer and ovarian cancer, though that risk is lower. So want to be fair, some cancers are lower, some are higher. Now, the other thing about this study that came out of the New England Journal of Medicine, this was not small. This was 1.8 million women that they looked at, and they were only 15 to 49. And that's important because as we get older, breast cancer risk rises. And but presumably, you shouldn't be in your 50s and be on birth control, although some women are still given it. So with this, they found there was an elevated risk of breast cancer. Now, on average, we expect that 55 out of 100,000 women will develop breast cancer if they're not on hormonal birth control. That increases to 68 out of 100,000 per year will develop breast cancer. So it's a 20% increased risk of breast cancer. And that is an important thing to consider because where does this woman live? What's her family history? How does she eat? All of these can also play a role. Is she a night shift worker? Her risk is already up if she's a night shift worker. Then we add birth control on top of it. She should know that risk before she begins that. Now, the other thing that was interesting about this study is that, again, estrogen was vilified for so long, and yet what we found in this study is that progestins may increase the risk of breast cancer. So that means that just because you're not taking the combination pill, if you've got a Mirena IUD, we have to ask the question, could this potentially be increasing her risk of breast cancer?
And it needs to be stated, which I was so surprised to find when I was doing my research, that progestins and the estrogens are known human carcinogens. They're mm-hmm. listed by the government
yeah.
as known human carcinogens. Now, that should be a red flag, neon sign going in big letters, you know, right there. Known human mm-hmm. carcinogens as designated by our government.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's so something that, like, on the carcinogen scale, they are low, you know, compared to, like, other chemicals that are out there. But I think it's important for people to understand it is a low-risk carcinogen, but it's not about one and done. It's not about, like, oh, just it's just the pill I'm taking. It's also about, like, What else are you doing? Are you eating processed food? Are you eating barbecue food? Do you get exposed to toluene and benzene? And what's in your personal care products? Like, it is the compounding of all of these things that we're exposed to. And so that's what you and I think do very differently than in the conventional paradigm, is that we look at people like a bucket. How full is your bucket? If you add the pill, is that going to cause it to overflow in terms of your toxic burden? That's what we need to be asking, because some of us can handle it, but some of us have MTHFR mutations, which is a genetic mutation that impacts how you utilize your folate and run your homocysteine pathway. And with that, if that's true for you, you're at higher risk for having a blood clot and heart attacks as is, but you're also at higher risk of having poor detoxification pathways. And so for you, it may be more of a burden. And that is the thing, that's the place we need to go in the conversations as we move forward, is what is true for this human who's sitting across from me right now?
Okay, so as we come to the end of our hour in a little bit, a couple of things I want us to address. What are your recommended options to the pill? What do you tell women to explore?
Yeah, so if you're going to use hormonal birth control, then you definitely want to grab beyond the pill and know how to take care of your body on it. In chapter 13 of the book, I go through the non-hormonal contraceptive options available. So barrier method, copper IUD, fertility awareness method, and I take you through the pros and the cons of those so you can select what is best for you. There is no one best contraceptive for everyone. We really have to look at, okay, what is your lifestyle like? What's realistic for you? And how are you going to be able to ensure that you prevent pregnancy if that is your main goal and what you're doing, and you're using hormones for? And so, with all of that, we definitely, go through it in the book, and then we definitely want to understand that we should track our data before we start anything, even condoms, because those can cause allergic reactions or rashes if there's spermicides in them, and it can alter vaginal ecology. But with that, we want to track your data, get you to know your body really well, then start your method of choice and continue to track your data so you understand if it's working for you. And this is important whether it's hormonal, non-hormonal. We should do the same with the copper IUD. With fertility awareness method, the nice thing about it is you're already tracking your data. That's how that method works. And with that's a method that we finally have seen the FDA approve a femtech device for in 2018 called Natural Cycles. I'm a big fan of Natural Cycles, Daisy, even the apps that help you dial in your fertility awareness method, mostly because I'm really bad at paper charting it. Taking Charge of Your Fertility is a great book to learn how to do all of that. But if you don't want a paper chart, you can use these devices. But these devices don't mean you take a backseat to your reproductive health. You want to look at your fertile cervical mucus. You want to work with a fertility awareness educator so that you can make sure you're using the method best. And in the current political landscape, we've had a lot of patients concerned that they're going to lose access to birth control, that it's something that's going to be taken away from them. And the thing, and that's very possible, right? I mean, look at the history that we started this whole conversation with. It's totally possible. Crazier things have happened to women in this society. And with that, though, no one can ever take away you noticing you have fertile cervical mucus, you seeing an uptick in your temperature. No one can take away or replace you knowing your body so well. And unlike the story that's been perpetuated for years, your body is not so complicated that you can't understand it, okay? And women are not so dumb that they can't worry their pretty heads with, getting to know their body. In fact, I meet a lot of women and fertility awareness educators who actually know how a menstrual cycle works and how to dial in fertility a lot better than some doctors that are out there. And that's just not something that they've dedicated to understanding. So know that that can be a really great method for preventing pregnancy. But even if it's not, there's super, super valuable data that you can get from that to really understand how your body works. And when things get out of balance, you will know it. And you will notice it far before your labs will be abnormal. So by the time your labs are abnormal, you've likely been putting up with symptoms for a long time. The ideal, from my perspective is you have symptoms, so let's go back and let's fix things now before your labs change.
That's such wise advice. And I just want to say that your book, Beyond the Pill, is the best textbook, reference book, educational Bible for women to really understand everything they need to know about the not only the impact of the pill, but the protocols. You have such great information, advice. You have a whole section on supplement protocols. If you have, you know, too little progesterone, too much testosterone, too much estrogen, to how to detox your liver. You've got protocols in there with recommended supplementation. It's really a book that helps women understand their bodies and how to get back into balance, which for me is so critical because it is the key to finding your power as a woman. Our menstrual cycles are profoundly connected to our own sense of being authentic and aligned and connected to who we really are. And that, for me, is why I'm so passionate about educating women on this subject, Jolene, why you're doing such a great job, because it is a key to true empowerment for women. And that is often misunderstood or not recognized at all, how our menstrual cycles are directly supporting our sense of self and being in balance, and how being on the pill can often really take us way off the mark of who we are and our power. So such an interesting topic, so much to discuss. It's, you know, huge area impacting us on many levels. And you do such a great job, Jolene, in the book you've written. I encourage everyone to pick up a copy of Beyond the Pill. I know it's on Amazon. I'm sure it's in many places. Certainly go to Dr. Jolene Brighton's website, which is Dr. Brighton, BRIGHTEN.com, because I know you have tremendous amount of information available to women there. It's really a wake-up call to women. It's about women owning their bodies, taking responsibility for their bodies, getting back in balance naturally so they can really express who they are fully in this world. So, Dr. Jolene Brighton, thank you so much. Do you have one last thing? You have one more minute. One last thing you want to add before we have to wrap this up?
The last thing I would say is that you know your body better than anyone else. And if you can start tracking your data and writing it down, then if you go to your doctor with a concern and this really very real phenomenon happens where they gaslight you and they make you feel like you don't really understand your body or that your story is not real, or somebody else inadvertently challenges you that you're like, I eat more broccoli and I feel better, and someone's like, that's not real. If you're tracking all of that, you'll be able to use your manual to yourself, which is what I teach you to do in Beyond the Pill. But also, you'll have the data there to know what is true for you, so that even if you start to second guess yourself, you can see what you tested, what you understand to be true for you, and recognize that that is so, so powerful in navigating your own health.
Great words of wisdom. Thank you so much for the fantastic work you're doing, Dr. Jolene Brighton. I just really honor you immensely for all the work you've put into this book and the message that you are sharing with women around the world.
Oh, well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on, and I really appreciated this discussion.
Well, thank you again, and thank you to everyone listening. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self, and that's what today was all about. And we'll be with you again next week. Until then, take care and have a great week. Bye for now.